Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest today is Clayton Morris. Clayton, thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
I'm excited to have you because I've seen you on the TV and I've heard you on podcasts.
On the telly,
exactly. But I've never actually spoken to you, so this is exciting. I know
I'm a fan of your show, so it's great for me. I'm thrilled to be on.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, tell the people who may not be familiar with you, although I think many people are, a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I'm a broadcaster. I anchor the news for Fox News Channel. Don't paint us all by one brush. But I'm from Philadelphia originally and grew up with a love of science fiction and Star Trek. And I'm a broadcaster. I'm a podcaster. I've had a podcast for like 7 years now where we kind of talk Marvel news and coffee and nerd stuff. And we just spent the whole summer geeking out on 80s pilot cartoon episodes. So we watched the first episode of some of our favorite and never heard of episodes of 80s cartoons. Like we did Transor Z and Mask and Sky Commanders. And
I love Mask.
Yeah. I was surprised at how many listeners of our show love Mask. They're like, oh my gosh. And we actually had a chance to have Doug Stone, the voice of Matt Tracker from Mask. We ran into him actually at a comic event. So yeah, it's a little bit about me. I'm a nerd and I'm a broadcaster.
Excellent. Well, you're in a safe place. This is a nerd safe zone, obviously, because it's a podcast about Star Trek. That's good. I didn't know you were from Philadelphia. I am in Philadelphia right now.
Oh, wow.
Yes, but that is not about Star Trek at all. But so you're a nerd, and we emailed a little back and forth. So I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
Oh, absolutely. And I came to that realization early on in my life. When I was at a Star Trek convention, I think when I was like 12, my dad drove me to Star Trek convention to see William Shatner as like the main keynoter at one outside of Philadelphia in King of Prussia.
Yes.
And then a few short years later, seeing Data or Brett Spiner at a convention and Nichelle Nichols. And so I've gone to a few Star Trek conventions myself. And a few years later, when I had the chance to interview William Shatner, like last year actually at Comic-Con, sat down with him for about a half an hour and just gracious as ever. And I told him, I said, you know, when I was a little kid, I saw you deliver, your keynote and told him a little story about it. And he said, how funny. And so it was like 20 years ago, whatever it was, 25 years ago. Full circle.
It's funny how life works out that way.
Yeah.
I've never been to a Star Trek convention myself.
Really?
So, yeah. I don't know why I have not ever gotten to it. I'm lazy. So that's part of it. You know, it's a trek in Philadelphia. They're always at the convention center that's out in King of Prussia. And I'm like, ugh, I don't want to go out to King of Prussia.
Yeah.
So that's the main reason. Although I haven't lived in Philadelphia my entire life, so I don't have any excuse before that. I also don't like to meet people in person, so.
Yeah, if you're not a people person and you don't like to drive.
See, I'm a hermit and angry.
I don't like to leave my house. And chances are you probably don't want to go to a place where there's lots of people.
Exactly. And while I appreciate fandom, and obviously I'm a part of it, I find, for whatever reason, I don't want to meet any Star Trek people, actors, I should say, just because I know they are real people, but to me, they are the characters. And then once you meet them in person, they are no longer the character. They're, you know, William Shatner, who I'm sure is a lovely man, but, you know, he's not Captain Kirk.
It's true. Of course, he hasn't really been the Captain Kirk of my memory, you know, of the 1960s show, the original series, for many, many years. So he looks like the Priceline guy to me.
That's true. Know? Or T.J. Hooker, right. Depending on your particular William Shatner fandom. Or Rescue 911. Didn't he host that?
Oh, right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
William Shatner, varied career.
Mm-hmm.
So you like Star Trek. You're a Star Trek fan. You've gone to conventions. Have you dressed up as some kind of Star Trek character?
No. Maybe on my show, Fox and Friends, I may have dressed up for like some kind of segment at one point where somebody sent me some of the yellow original series Star Trek shirts with the logo. But I don't think, no, I've never actually dressed up. But I was a fan of like the models, so I would glue and build like the bridge as a child. I had some of the original series models and the Enterprise, which I've now handed down to my 5-year-old son, and he digs that. And I've right now over my shoulder here in my home office, I have these those PVCs of the original series. So I think I had every one of them. The episode Arena, the Gorn. I have the Gorn, and then the whole crew, and then a bunch of the other guys from Journey to Babel. So, my kids come in and look at my Star Trek figures all the time in my home office as well.
So I am noticing a trend, and I don't want to speak for you, so I'm just going to ask what your favorite series is, because if I had to guess, I think I had a guess, but I don't want to spoil it. So you tell me what it is.
There's something so beautifully pastel and kitschy and intimate and inviting about the original series for me, and it holds, I don't know, some weird place in my heart. I'll give you the short story. I used to work at McDonald's. It was my first job. Mm-hmm. And I would do like the morning shift where I'd be there like 5 a.m. And I would come home on a Saturday from the shift and be exhausted. And I'd bring myself like a little bag of lunch. And on the local affiliate, like the local Fox affiliate outside of Philadelphia, they would play Star Trek at like 1 or 2 in the afternoon on a Saturday. And I'd be so tired. And I just would sort of sit on the couch under like a blanket, have my little bag of like McDonald's food and watch Star Trek. And it was like the most peaceful, calming experience. And it's nostalgic for me. And also on Saturday nights, I don't know if you recall in the Philadelphia area, there was a local PBS affiliate that used to play the Star Trek original series episodes back to back to back, 3 back to back with no commercials. And in between those episodes was Jack Horkheimer, who would do like a 5 to 6 minute astronomy segment.
Oh.
Where he would talk about the night sky this week, and he would like bounce around on clouds. And if anyone like just Googles and goes to YouTube and looks for
his
Jack
members
Horkheimer,
only jacket, right? Is that
yes,
him?
Yes, yeah, he would zip up. Yep, he would zip up and shoot off. So I love that. And so sitting there on like a Saturday night, I mean, yeah, total loser, right?
And that's what I would watch on my Saturday nights now.
Well, I love it, you know, and I would sit and I'd watch like all of them. And I got out my VHS cassette tapes and I would record them and I would label them and try to get all 79 episodes, which I did at one point. So, yeah, I love the Next Gen as well. But the original series for me, that's the one.
You know, and as I was listening to your story, it made me think about something that I've spoken about before in previous episodes of Random Trek, but it's something that strikes me every time I think about it, is that, you know, when we were kids and watching Star Trek, or any TV show, really, especially for the things from the 60s when they were syndicated, right, it was chance that you would see an episode, right? You couldn't schedule it, and if you wanted to collect it like you did, you'd have to get your VHS tape out and just record it and hope that one you didn't have already was going to come on. But now, which is, you know, on one hand very good, but on the other hand kind of sad that you can just, you know, turn on any number of devices and watch any episode of Star Trek ever made immediately, which I love because, hey, Star Trek is everywhere. It makes me sad because there's no more of that serendipity of, oh, look, it's this random episode I haven't thought of in forever.
Right. No, I did love that about knowing it was exciting to kind of I'd set my VHS tapes up on my parents' VCR, which was NASA engineers would have had difficulty programming this VCR, but I made it my mission to figure it out. And it was like an original gray one from like the mid to early 80s or something. It was, you know, horribly inefficient, and I figured out how to program it. And I would drive my bike over to the pharmacy and pick up new VHS tapes just to record episodes. And I had a special blue pen. I mean, this is getting into the weeds now with dorkiness. And
I like the weeds, man.
I had a special like little blue marker that I would mark up the sides of the tape so I could look at it and see if it was an original series or Next Gen and the episode name. Mm-hmm. Color-coded. And then I had like a little paper three-hole punch thing that I created that had all of the episodes listed. And that was also difficult to find back then, pre-internet. Like,
yeah.
Well, what are the episodes and in what order do they air and how many are there? And well, does this count? Does the pilot count as an episode? And, you know, and I would just write them all down and then label them with the number of the tape. So I'd put the number on the side. Yeah.
Did you draw like Starfleet insignias on your labels or?
No, I never went that far. No, that'd be way over the line.
Yeah, you have a line that's crossing it.
Yeah, that's way over. Just drawing insignias now. Now you're getting ridiculous.
Now that is super dorky.
Right.
I would do that, but I have no artistic ability, so it would just look like a blob of something. So no one would know what it meant. So what about the original series? I know it's nostalgic for you, and I have this pet theory that whatever Star Trek you see first is your favorite Star Trek, which may not be the case for you. But is it the stories, the characters that keep drawing you back to the original series? Or is it just this kind of this sense of nostalgia, which is very powerful? It's like the most powerful thing in the world, I think, is nostalgia.
I think a combination of all of that. I you know, something about the color palette for me was also inviting. I know that seems strange, perhaps, but then when you compare it against like Enterprise, you know, there's just something warm about that show, and also it's accessible too. So you're instantly drawn in with the characters, and sort of immediately brought into that small little world, that tight knit group of Bones, McCoy, Scotty, Uhura. Sulu and Chekhov and Captain Kirk, like just that little, you know, intimate world, you're sort of sucked right into it. You know, you get a lot of that with The Next Generation, and I love that show as well. And I think I had many, many tapes taping The Next Generation episodes as well. But there was something, I think, carefree, or, I mean, obviously the joke is that you would never send your captain down to the planet, right?
Yes.
And they certainly did away with that a lot in The Next Generation. So there's something a little cavalier about the original series and a little devil may care that I appreciated.
Well, that's certainly the embodiment of Kirk's character, right? He's confident. He knows what to do. He doesn't care about regulations. He's just going to go over there and sort something out. Spock, you stay here. I'm going over there.
Right.
Spock's like, I don't know if that's the best idea, Captain. I don't care.
And, you know, I have to say, and this is where the cheesiness part comes into me. One of my favorite episodes is the Galileo 7. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, I even made the little shuttlecraft model at one point with glue, you know, the whole thing with the stickers. And that episode for me, I love the set designs, which sadly, you know, in the third season, you know, we're less and less. But those set designs of being on the planet with that, the weird sunsets and sunrises, you know, the weird, you know, pastel colors and that mixture of like sand and fake rocks. And I don't know, there's just something about it that just warms my heart.
So I have to ask you this question. Now, they have remastered several years ago, they remastered the original series.
Right.
In beautiful HD. So it looks better than it ever has before. But they also redid the special effects. And they have an option where you can watch it with the original special effects or with new fancy special effects. So, are you aware of these remasters? I'm going to guess you are. And B, do you prefer the original special effects or the remastered special effects?
Well, I mean, I appreciate the originals. Those are, you know, fond of that. But I didn't watch them live in the 60s, you know. So it doesn't hold that kind of place, you know, for nostalgia for me. But watching them originally, you know, in the 90s when I first, or the late 80s when I first came to Star Trek, you know, I appreciated the cheesiness of the phaser fire and the circling the planet looking cheesy. But when the remasters came out, I thought they did it the way that they should have, and George Lucas should have taken notice of how to properly do these. And I personally felt – I had this discussion a few weeks ago with one of my camera guys. He's a real purist when it comes to this sort of thing. He wants like the releases on DVD to be exactly the way they were on television, not just Star Trek but any of the series. He's like a real aficionado of old, you know, even like the 60s Batman and everything, Monkees episodes, everything. And – I don't mind it. In fact, I think it enhances it. I think a lot of what they did, like with the ship floating around the planet, for some of those interstitials. In fact, the episode that we're, I guess, going to talk about today, there's a lot in that episode that I appreciated that they did, I think, that helped enhance this episode. And without taking away from that joyous, kitschy quality of the bridge and some of the technical aspects of the show. So I don't think it takes away from it. I think it enhances it. Of course, the old ones are always there. You can go look at if you want to.
Exactly. If you have the Blu-rays, you can actually switch back and forth as you're watching to old special effects or new special effects if you care. I am a new special effects guy because I think I agree with you that they did it in the spirit of Star Trek, and it looks it looks like the special effects they would have done if they could have done them in the 60s.
Right.
As opposed to, let's just make it look, you know, as photorealistic as possible. So that's good. But you mentioned you were lucky enough to get one of the rare original series episodes, because there are only, what, 79 original series episodes? There are 600 and some odd episodes in total of Star Trek. So chances are not good to get an original series episode on Random Trek. You got one of, I would say, an iconic original series episode.
Yeah.
The Corbinite Maneuver, which is what, Series 1, or Season 1. Suddenly I turned into an English person. Season 1, Memory Alpha is telling me Episode 2, although that seems, maybe it was released and the second, aired the second, I thought it was Episode 10, but it doesn't matter. Someone will correct me on the internet. Tell me why Amazon lists it as the 10th and Alpha, Memory Alpha tells me it's the second episode. But either way, early episode of Star Trek.
I think it was recorded second, or it was filmed second, right?
Is this? That's right, because they did the pilot, and then they did, this is the one with the people that we know, with Bones and Kirk.
Right.
And so this is the first time that those folks are together, and it boggles my mind that they came out. It did it so well. Every time I watch a first season original series episode, I am shocked at how much they got right, you know, quote unquote right. But they got the right feel. They have such iconic scripts. The characters are all right. And then when you compare it to first seasons of other Star Trek franchises, not as great.
Yeah, you know, and I think they spent a lot of time with, like, the character exposition and helping, you know, that relationship. So there's a lot of back and forth with, you know, establishing that Spock, you don't want to mess with him when it comes to, you know, battles of the mind.
Oh, yes. Or Bailey. Oh, Bailey.
Oh, Bailey, you know. So, yeah, Bailey is the lieutenant in the yellow, yellow shirt, who is just like a petulant child. You know, he's like Luke Skywalker in the first film. You know, he's just like, well, no, let's just blast him.
And then he freaks out.
Right.
And then we find out, you know, because he has some interesting interactions with Spock where he's, like, oh boy, you know, Spock tells him to turn off some flashing light that he forgot to turn off, and he's like, let's blow up this buoy thing, and Spock is not having any of it. And then Bones says to Kirk, like, you know, what's this deal with Bailey? Maybe you promoted him too soon. And Kirk's like, no, he has great potential. And we find out that basically Kirk sees a younger version of himself in Bailey.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of good establishing of these characters in this episode. You know, the relationship between McCoy and Kirk also, you know, he's harassing him about his weight, making him eat salad, dietary salad, and that whole exchange, and making him work out and ignoring the red, you know, the red alert.
Which is great. I just have to laugh whenever Dr. McCoy prescribes a salad for Kirk. And also quickly, the Yeoman Rand is like, oh, I can get you a salad too, Dr. McCoy. And he's like, no, I will only eat when the rest of the crew eats.
Right.
No salads for me.
Yeah. You know, this episode at the beginning, and I think, and maybe someone on the interwebs can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you can tell, first of all, that this is an early episode with the way that Spock's shirt hangs on him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like baggy and doesn't look sewn together well, like around the arms. And then they correct that in the later episodes where he's wearing the blue and it fits well and everything else. But in this early first two episodes, first in filming sequence, it looks baggy and it's kind of like loosely hanging on him. And also he looks a little bit more demonic in his eyebrows in these first few episodes. Additionally, at the beginning of this episode, there is this really bizarre like camera shot that comes down and it stands out. And I don't know that they ever did it ever again in any of the episodes. And so someone can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it like comes down from the ceiling at the opening of the episode as if you're coming into the bridge, and it like kind of zooms down and you kind of like see the crew, and then it zooms over to the navigation panel. It's almost like a Martin Scorsese
yes.
shot, you know, that takes a long time to get to.
And I was going to comment on that as well, because it stands out as such a non-Star Trek shot.
Right.
I don't think it's bad. I think it's kind of cool, actually. But it's so out of character for the show. And, of course, at this point, they didn't have a character for the show, like the look and feel of the show with camera angles, since it was the second episode, right? So they were trying all kinds of wacky things to see what would stick. I imagine at some point someone thought, why don't we start every episode kind of swooping into the bridge to make sure that people remember that these people are in this spaceship, just so that, you know, the viewers won't forget that, yes, this is all happening in a spaceship.
And, of course, cinematography by Jerry Finnerman, and who then there's another shot that he tried, the sort of tracking shot. I don't know if you recall that shot.
I was going to bring up that shot, too, where Kirk comes out of the turbo lift.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly. And they follow him, and it's... I hate to keep using like George Lucas as an example. Although it reminds me of Star Trek, the motion picture, where you have this like 4-minute sequence of them like taking a look at the Enterprise for the first time as they arrive. Holy, was that painful or not?
I thought that was a 4-hour sequence, actually.
Oh, my God. But it's like, okay, we get that he's walking on the bridge, and and this was probably a new thing at that time. I don't know how often camera guys were doing this kind of walk and shoot, and like Uhura looks up at him, and it's a little awkward, but they never did that again.
No, and I had the same thought as you. I was thinking, this is probably a huge technical achievement, because cameras back then were gigantic, so I can't imagine they did this kind of shot very often, and it must have required a lot of setup. And someone on the internet can correct me if I'm wrong, because I do not know much about 1960s camera work. So I will use that disclaimer before someone sends me a nasty email telling me how wrong I am. But yeah, it was cool. I talk about this every time I talk about an original series episode. But so they're a little longer. They're about 6 or 7 minutes longer. And it seems to me, I mean, the pacing is totally different than at a modern show. And it seems to me that those extra six or seven minutes generally are spent having the camera look at something that we don't really care about, or watching people walk down corridors.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of cutaway shots of like Lieutenant Bailey's face, like sort of moaning and grunting and looking at the looking at the big bridge monitor. Looking Kirk walking down the hallway with his shirt off.
And there's a weird shot of he goes to his quarters to put a shirt on, and then he's like, oh, I better go to the... He calls up to the bridge, and he's like, oh, have all the senior officers meet me on the bridge. And Spock's like, we're all waiting for you already, because we're in a crisis, so hurry up, Kirk. And there's a shot of Captain Kirk standing up, and the camera is stationary. Captain Kirk stands up from behind his little desk. He walks past the camera, and his butt is in the frame, and the entire shot, it's like, maybe 30 seconds of just watching his butt as he walks out of his quarters. And I thought, I think we can understand that if you just jump to the bridge with Captain Kirk coming out of the turbo lift with his other shot, that we will understand that he walked out of his office.
Right.
But there, we're going to show you.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't catch that this time around, but it's true. Yeah, the pacing and the cutting of like next gen episodes compared to this, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
With that additional 6 minutes.
And the other thing that struck me as so odd in this episode, and we haven't even, I think we're still talking about like the first 5 minutes of this episode, is Captain Kirk is not in the first little stinger before the credits, right? It's just Spock and the rest of the crew, and they are mapping out, they're doing some star mapping, which apparently means that they're, moving the ship a little bit and taking pictures and doing things, and Bailey's complaining about it because he has to press this button.
Right. Do you know, and I don't off the top of my head, but I can't recall another episode where Kirk is not in the opening sequence from the original series. And by the way, I just doing a little digging. This was production number 3. So they shot this one third in the sequence, but aired 10th.
Ah, see, there you go. Look, the internet can solve things. Before, when you were creating your list of episodes and for your tapes, you wouldn't have figured that out without going to the library, getting some kind of book, or maybe a fanzine, perhaps. But anyway, to answer your question, I don't recall an episode where Kirk is not in the opening scene. I'm sure there someone will correct me, but that's why it struck me as so odd, because he's not there. But then I thought, well, of course he's not there, because they're doing star mapping and it's boring, so Captain Kirk obviously wouldn't be there. And I forgot that he was in sickbay doing his physical. And so as I was watching this, I was like, oh, he's probably just like sleeping in his cabin or something, letting Spock handle all the sciencey things.
Right. Yeah, I didn't recall whether or not he's, you know, every other episode, they're always kind of starts off with the same way. They're beaming down to a planet, or mm-hmm. they've got, you know, something on the bridge that they're interacting with, or there's a meeting happening. But usually Kirk's in every one of them, except the Cage, of course, which is the you know, one of the first two pilots, the Cage, and where no man has gone before.
Right. Does make sense. Yeah. And I do like that this establishes the fact that Captain Kirk hates having his physical for whatever reason. And apparently the physical involves pedaling the wall for several minutes.
Right.
Well, Dr. McCoy watches you.
Just like the weirdest contraption. I don't know if – was that like – I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't work out much now. I just walk. But in the 1960s, was that like a typical type of workout equipment where people would lay on their backs and they would pedal on a wall?
Imagine.
It's like some like derivation of 60s workout material. It was totally like new for Star Trek and, you know, in space.
I imagine they took some kind of fad and just extrapolated it for future exercise.
Right.
Take off your shirt, Captain Kirk. It's time to pedal the walls. And he's very sweaty. There's a lot of sweaty Kirk in this episode.
I'd forgotten about the blowing up of that cube.
Yes.
You know, when the cube is following them, tracking them. They can't get away from it. And, you know, they end up finally going after and trying to attack it as they try to escape from it. I didn't recall, you know, when I had originally seen it many, many years ago, like that they actually blew the thing up, but they did. And
Although they tried really hard not to for a long time. They were like, Captain Kirk. So Captain Kirk, they meet this cube and, you know, Spock says red alert and Captain Kirk's in sick bay and Dr. McCoy's not telling him that it's a red alert, which seems really weird. And he can't apparently, like Sulu does an all ship announcement and apparently in sick bay you don't hear those announcements because Captain Kirk has no idea what's going on. and then Captain Kirk is like, okay, well why didn't you tell me that the red light was flashing? And Dr. McCoy's like, you need to finish your physical, blah, blah, blah. And there is a funny scene where, you know, Kirk leaves, and Dr. McCoy says, if I had to interrupt myself every time something was flashing, I'd start talking to myself. And, of course, he's alone talking to himself. Ha-ha, right. That's funny. the other odd thing, and I'll get back to this cube, but it is leading up to the cube, is that Captain Kirk, you know, there's a red alert. Captain Kirk is like, well, let me go to my quarters first and put on a new shirt before I go up to the bridge.
Right.
And I thought to myself, that seems inappropriate, Captain Kirk.
Yeah, stopping back in your quarters to get a new shirt to go to the bridge.
Maybe just put on your sweaty shirt and go up and see what's going on.
Right, yeah. Just get to the bridge already.
Exactly.
And by the way, wouldn't they try to get a hold of the captain if they can't get away from this mysterious object that's now hovering in front of them? They do everything, you know, captain the bridge, make some sort of announcement to get there.
Send an ensign down there in case Dr. McCoy has sabotaged the intercom or something.
Yeah, you find out where he is.
Yeah, so there's this cube. They can't get around it. It's following them around. Bailey, who is, you know, I guess standing in for hotheads everywhere, is like, let's blow it up. This is ridiculous. You're all robots. Captain Kirk is like, calm down there, Bailey. Let's try to outmaneuver it. And that doesn't work.
Yeah, so they end up blowing it up. And then, you know, I want to come back to that when we get towards the end of it because, you know, the ship sustained like heavy damage as a result of this.
Yes.
Right? Like they're sort of like they may have to return to a star base because they've taken on such damage as a result of this. So just put that in your brain for a little bit later in the episode.
Yes. So they wait, and in something that maybe, I guess it's kind of in Kirk's character. He wants to test his ship and test his crew. So he waits to see if they can get around the thing. They try to warp away and it keeps up with them and it gets closer. It starts getting closer and closer and starts emitting this deadly radiation. And still Kirk doesn't want to blow it up until, you know, Spock is like, we only have a few more seconds of taking this radiation and then we're all going to die, basically. And so then they blow it up when it's super close to the ship, which seems like the worst time to blow it up. But I guess they had no choice at that point. And the ship is heavily damaged. And one can only assume that the entire crew is irradiated and will all eventually die of cancer. But we don't know about that part.
And then, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, so I mean now they're like taking on the assessment whether or not they're going to go after this thing and find out what's the heart of this probe that was allegedly sent to them to track them. Are they going to go after it or are they going to return to a star base to get fixed up? And of course, you know, it's an interesting little discussion. I like some of the dialogue between, you know, obviously Kirk and McCoy during their physical, and then Ohas in his office or in his quarters when he's talking to him about the leafy green salad and what to
yes.
do. But then also I like Kirk's interaction with Spock where he sort of sits and seeks his counsel from a yes. science point of view. I thought that was a good moment.
I love that scene because it sums up, you know, you can tell that they have a friendship, and especially at the end because, you know, Captain Kirk's like, well, what, basically he says, hey, Spock, what do you think we should do? Spock tells him, well, I think we probably should not continue, but go get repairs, basically. But he says, are you asking for, you know, a logical thing to do? And Captain Kirk's like, no, I've already made up my mind. I just wanted to hear what you had to say.
Right.
And Spock's like, well, maybe it'd be more efficient if you just did what you were going to do anyway and not ask me.
Right. Yeah. So then, of course, they decide to go after it.
It would be a very short episode if they didn't.
Yeah. And what unfolds next?
That's a good question. Don't
they had that big meeting. They commiserate over coffee.
Yes.
Kind of trying to figure out...
Coffee plays a critical role in a couple of scenes of this episode.
Right, right.
They figure they're going to keep going, and then they come into, don't they meet the giant flagship? They don't know what it is yet, but it is a flagship of the First Federation. They see this object that is very large, and it grabs them in a tractor beam, and apparently uses their navigation beam to talk to them, which seems weird.
Right, so Balok appears for the first time, this
yes.
Weird creature. And, of course, this this image of Balok as this weird alien creature appears in the end title sequence, mm-hmm. I think, of every episode of Star Trek, right?
Yes, I think – isn't this the freeze frame in which they put Desilu over? So you have Balok and Desilu on top of it.
Yeah, that's right. So Balok, which is just like this blue-skinned humanoid with this freaky face.
which totally looks like a puppet. Spoiler alert, people. In fact, in the episode, it is a puppet.
Right. It's totally a puppet. And, you know, of course, Balok ignores Kirk and says he tries to be nice in typical Federation way. And then Balok says, no, I'm just going to destroy you.
Yep, yep. You ignored our warning beacon, then you blew it up. What the heck's wrong with you? Now I am going to destroy your primitive vessel. I will give you 10 of your Earth units, you call minutes, to, you know, reconcile with whatever creator you believe in, and then I will destroy you.
And then this is the best part when Bailey, Lieutenant Bailey, just flips out.
Yes, he completely freaks out.
And they have to kick him off the bridge.
Yes. This is, once again, makes me think that Starfleet really needs to look into who it recruits.
Right, some of their mental stability.
Yes.
Or some of their
because everyone else looks worried, but he, like, freaks the hell out.
Right. No, and he stands up and starts,
he wants to blow up. He's like, when Kirk came to it earlier, Kirk comes to a decision about, you know, oh, we're going to have to do something. And Bail is like, oh, clearly he wants to blow up the buoy. So he tries to send that order to blow up the buoy. And Kirk's like, hold on a second, Bailey. Bailey, not a great officer. And so at the end of this episode, I guess he gets his comeuppance, which is also kind of cruel, but we'll get to that.
Right. So then this is when the whole chess thing like unfolds between Spock and Kirk, and you know, seems like that they're, you know, being outmatched by Balok. We don't know what to do. And but then this is when I like the dialogue here. Kirk, you know, says it's really not like chess, it's really like poker, and he has this idea up his sleeve to bluff.
Yeah, basically lie.
And I would say that this, I think, is this one of the more famous, certainly one of the most famous maneuvers or recurring things that's happened in Star Trek and referenced probably more than most. I think up there with like the Kobayashi Maru,
mm-hmm.
I think the Corbomite maneuver is probably referenced. Well, I don't know how many times it's referenced later in Trekdom, but I know that it makes another appearance in that episode, The Deadly Years.
Yes.
Which I did like. He uses it once again, this idea that they've got Corbomite on board, and that if you're going to what is it, like a protective?
Yeah, it's a protective shield device kind of thing, and if you attack them, it just kind of – it's basically, I'm rubber, you're glue, whatever you do to me bounces off me and sticks to you.
Right. So go try to blow us up, because when you try to blow us up, it's going to blow you up as well.
Exactly. And Baylock is, it is clear, he's in like this giant ship. Well, we don't know if it's one. Well, there's one person definitely in this giant ship that we've seen, Baylock. And he's got much better technology than our friends on the Enterprise do. One assumes better scanners, but yet he falls for it.
Right.
Yeah, or does he? That's the question.
Yeah, and I guess we don't know, right? We don't know if then he just, you know, but he says, look, you know, he after the 10 minutes is up where he gave them to pray to their gods, that's he doesn't right. blow them up.
And there's a very tense, Sulu has a stopwatch there with a countdown, and he's right. he's announcing every couple of minutes, and Scotty's like, man, you really like watches, don't you, Sulu?
Yeah. So
they don't blow up. Spoiler alert, the third episode of Star Trek, the whole crew does not die.
Yeah, they don't blow up, and then suddenly, what is this, that small ship like comes off of the main ship and takes the Enterprise away.
Yeah, and I don't really understand why it does that, but they decide, instead of blowing them up, they're like, okay, we're not going to blow you up, but we're going to take your ship, and we're going to take you to a planet that you can live on, and we're going to strand you there, like you will do in your future, Captain Kirk, to Khan, and we will blow up your ship there, and you'll live your life forever stranded on this planet. The crew, not a big fan of this plan.
Yeah, so, you know, I think Spock wants to come with them at the time, right? But I think he doesn't.
Yes, so Kirk decides, all right, we're going to beam over there. They scan the ship, I guess, and cause some damage and decide to beam over there because it's – or they get out of the tractor beam, right, somehow. I forget how. But that damages the ship, apparently, and it sends out a distress call. And Captain Kirk's like, well, we have to help.
Right, now we've got to help this guy.
Exactly. Even though they were going to destroy us and strand us, it is our job to help them. And of course, Dr. McCoy's like, you're crazy! And he's like, that's our mission, is to meet new aliens and help them. So we're going over there, damn it, Jim.
Right.
And he's like, I'm going to take Dr. McCoy, and I'm going to take, who should I take? Who is the most unstable person on the bridge? Who could, oh, Bailey, you're coming with us.
Yeah, let's go, Bailey.
Which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So then they beam over there, and it's all cramped. And when they're scanning it initially before they beam over, they realize that it's kind of cramped. They're like, what's going on over this? You got to bend down when you get over there, which I thought was kind of a cool.
Tiny little ship.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a cool scene of them kind of crouching on the transporter pads.
Yeah, so they wouldn't be reanimated inside of a wall somehow.
All decapitated.
Right. So then they sit there and they see Baylock is just like a dummy in front of a television monitor, this puppet. And then the real Baylock, of course, is this weird, creepy, like adult baby.
Just played so bizarre. By the weird, creepy adult baby Clint Howard.
Clint Howard, right, of course, Ron Howard's brother.
Yes. In a perfect bit of casting.
Oh, it was perfect. And like the weird laughing that he does and like the cackling, and you just like, you're totally creeped out by him. It was such a weird, yeah, so such weird casting. But,
yes.
You know, I watched this with my son, and a few months ago, and the next day he's like, well, you know, that's like that alien Baylock. He kept bringing up Baylock like the next day, and stuck with him, the creepy, weird human, you know, adult baby.
You've done your job well, Clayton. Yeah. You've terrorized your child with an episode of Star Trek.
Clint Howard.
Oh, Clint Howard. Yes, and so they have, you know, Clint Howard is a kid. I don't know how old he was, but he was a very young kid. And so they dubbed Baylock's voice over him. And so he has this deep adult voice. And he's an adult. The character Baylock is an adult of his race. He's just, they are little people. It turns out he's just lonely.
Right. Yeah. And well, so... What's so weird about this, usually Kirk would flip out if someone had like hurt his ship, put his crew at risk, he would flip out. You know, there's no way he's going to be talking to these people. But instead, he kind of like just sloughs it off.
Yeah, well, I think it's because he looks like a kid.
Yeah, he's not really like put off by it, which is one of the big things that bothers me about this episode. He's kind of like, eh, okay.
You've irradiated it. Yeah, you nearly killed us with the radiation, nearly blew up our ship, but... all right.
You're like, okay, you know, hey, you were a little lonely. I get that.
That's like, right. You gave us a drink. It's okay.
So we sit down and we're just, you know, I'm just lonely. I just wanted to play. I just wanted to have some fun. And thanks for playing.
Yeah, I wanted to show somebody my cool ship.
Right. I wanted you to come over and see my nice inside of my ship.
It is very strange. Although even stranger to me is Baylock is like, well, you know, I'm really interested in your culture. Maybe we could, you know, hang out for some time, Kirk. And Kirk is like, well, I'm busy, but why don't we leave Bailey here?
I'd love that. Yeah, you know, he wants to learn more about their relationship and culture. And he's like, yeah, let's just, Bailey, why don't you just stay here as like as an ambassador for the Federation? You can just like hang out on the ship and just kind of like live here with this little weird human adult baby.
You have no training in this kind of first contact or dealing with, you have no authority to make any kind of treaties or anything, but it's cool, right? You'll stay here.
And what I love is Bailey's like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
This is what I've been waiting for.
Yeah, I'm going to stick around on this ship.
And Baylock is like, oh, Bailey represents the best of your species, clearly, because he's going to be an ambassador. And Bailey's like, nope, I am like the worst crewman on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
They just want to get rid of me. Very strange. And I can't help. And Bailey, we've never hear about Bailey ever again. I mean, not that the original series doesn't have arcs, so they kind of do a lot of things and just let it drop. But so I can only assume that Bailey lives out his life and dies with these people.
Right. Yeah, we never do. It's not like we hear like Khan gets resurfaced in a movie. You know, we don't know whatever happened to Bailey. I actually, that would be interesting. Is there ever any mention of him in any other Star Trek show? Do we know?
I don't know. It would be interesting. I bet Memory Alpha will tell me if Bailey ever shows up anywhere. Let's see. Dave Bailey. I didn't even know he had a first name. This makes good broadcasting. Me reading a website.
It's Anthony Call. Call is his name. Anthony, yes. Call, right? C-A-L-L.
Apparently, he is never mentioned again. Although I imagine, Memory Alpha probably would have this as well. He may pop up in a novel somewhere. I can imagine someone writing a Star Trek novel about Bailey and his adventures.
That's true. And I'm a big fan of those novels, by the way. I have tons of them over here. I have like a whole shelf in my office devoted to Star Trek novels, the original Star Trek series.
Oh, I spent a misspent summer of my youth reading like 50 of those books. Because, you know, I had no job. I was a kid. I could spend all day reading Star Trek books. And so I did.
That's awesome. That is awesome. I go on hunts now, like on eBay, to try to find some of them that are in perfect condition that I don't have, you know, to sort of fill in my, there's many, many that I don't have. So to be clear, but you know, I like to sort of hunt around when I know that I want like number 42, you know, I'm like looking out and I'll order like a few of them cause I want like the perfect one.
Oh, yes.
Eaten up. Even though they say it's in great condition, it shows up and it's bent.
That's, you know, the worst.
Right. Or they say it's in, it's like been in a smoke-free house and it smells like a pack of Marlboros when I open it up, you know.
The internet is full of liars.
It's true.
That is what we find out. And this episode ends. That's what happens. Basically, Bailey stays on the ship forever, apparently. And Baylock says, hey, why don't I show you around Bailey's new home? And he grabs Captain Kirk's hand, and he puts his arm through McCoy's arm. And they walk off the set, basically, and into Baylock's ship.
Yeah, and Bailey, I have to imagine if he lives there for the rest of his life, it's a cramped ship. He's going to have to literally be hunched over the entire time he lives on this ship.
Or he could lay. He has those comfortable-looking sofas, so maybe he could just lay on the sofa.
Like big pillows everywhere.
Yeah, and drink the, what is it, Trana? Trania?
Trania, yeah, something like that.
And, you know, tell the tale of the human history to Baylock.
Let's start at the beginning, Baylock.
That's right. So, what did you think of this episode overall, Clayton?
I love this episode. I think it's – I remember as a child – or not as a child. Well, yeah, I guess as a child. I remember there was some series that ran down – maybe it was on the – would have been the, what, 30th – no, 30th anniversary? 35th, I don't forget what anniversary of Star Trek, but they did like the 10 best of the original series. Mm-hmm. One particular, you know, weekend or something, and they ran down the episodes. And I remember this, of course, being right in the top 10. And it certainly is for pacing and just character development. And, you know, there's a good bit of interplay between the cast. Plus the story is compelling and keeps you gripped up until the end with a good turn. So I think this is the best of the original series. It represents the best of the original series, I think.
Yes, and I like the fact that, you know, you can watch it just as kind of a fun little adventure story. Or you can also, it has some layers, so it has, you know, Kirk is bluffing Baylock, and unbeknownst to us, Baylock has been bluffing Kirk and his crew the entire time as well, so it's an interesting interplay to see, you know, they subvert your expectations with the stupid-looking puppet, and you think, oh, the 60s, special effects suck. But then they're like, no, it actually is a puppet. It's not supposed to look good. And you're like, oh, that's pretty clever. So I think this is one of my favorite Star Trek episodes. It is iconic. Clint Howard is weird in it, but in a good way. I mean, he's weird generally in everything in a good way. So kudos to you, Clint Howard, for looking kind of weird.
And being kind of creepy. And by the way, I don't know if you know that I seen this years ago. He revived that character at William Shatner's roast.
I did not know that.
Yeah. They had Clint Howard, like, he came out like sort of dressed as Baylock or the creepy baby revived that character for William Shatner's roast.
Well, I will say, so I've called Clint Howard weird looking, and I think objectively he is weird looking, but aren't we all? But I will say, I find child actors to be generally annoying. But I think he did a fantastic job, as Baylock. Thumbs up for his performance.
Yeah, agreed.
Couldn't be easy for him to pretend to be, some alien person and, you know, talking to these folks. And apparently, Trania this is what the internet tells me, was actually grapefruit juice, and apparently Clint Howard hates grapefruit juice, and he probably found out that very day. So I'm imagining he drank a whole lot of grapefruit juice. So thank you for your service, Clint Howard.
That's right. You took one for the team. You know, there is one episode of Star Trek that I've never seen on purpose.
Oh.
So I know this is a little weird. This is really weird, actually.
Now I'm
and maybe
more
it's time. I mean, I feel kind of accomplished in my life and career now. I guess maybe it's time to do it. But as a child, I don't know why I said this. But at the time I said, I'm going to not watch an episode of Star Trek because I feel like if I've seen them all, then like there's no surprise left, right? So I saved one episode of Star Trek so that I said, someday when I've reached like a point in my life where I feel like I've reached a level of success in my career and so forth, I'll celebrate one night and I'll put on this episode of Star Trek as like the reward for like for that.
What is the episode?
I've still never watched it. It's a totally random episode, but it's Bread and Circuses.
Oh, Bread and Circuses.
So I've never seen that episode, but I've seen every other episode multiple times. And so, I've never watched it. And I've never read a synopsis of it. it's kind of bizarre. I know.
I think that's fantastic. I am just sad that you weren't randomly assigned Bread and Circuses, because how great would that have been?
Well, when you sent me the email, I was like looking to make sure that that was, because I would have said, look, actually, that might have been the perfect time to do it. Like, here we go. Like,
although,
this is a, you know.
I would have respected if you had decided, you know, I'm saving that episode for a special occasion. I would have said, okay, I will give you another randomly assigned episode.
I mean, it sounds so strange now that I'm saying out loud to another human being and not in my own weird head, but.
Well, if there was ever a better place to say it is on a Star Trek podcast.
That's right. I feel
dedicated.
Comfortable here.
Exactly.
Being in a shrink's office.
That's right. Just tell me, share your pain. Clayton, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real treat.
And now we're done.
Awesome.
That was fantastic.
Thank you so much. That was awesome.
You're welcome. Thank you. And Bread and Circuses, I'm not going to ruin it for you. So I won't even say anything. I'm not going to say anything because I think you've it's a special thing. Not going to say a thing. Although there are many episodes of, original series episodes that I have not seen. I haven't seen all of Voyager or Enterprise, but I have seen all the original series episodes.
Yeah, you know what's weird? Well, I know that it's not like a great episode, so you're not ruining anything.
Okay,
if that's what you're here about to say, I know that. But I like some of the episodes that aren't that good, like The Apple. Mm-hmm. You know, I like some of the. I mean, even like Squire of Gothos, like I wouldn't rank it up there. You know, but it's so
not
entertaining.
A great episode, but yeah. I like it because of Trelane.
I like Wolf in the Fold. I love the ambiance of that episode, even though it's not a very good episode. And I don't know. You know, there's a lot of those that are just kind of like mediocre, but I still enjoy them.
Next on Random Trek, Voyager Season 1, Episode 4, Time and Again.